I didn't lie because I wanted to. I lied because I didn't know how to exist without the mask. This is not a redemption story. This is a confession, raw, unfiltered, and terrifyingly real. Step inside the mind of a master manipulator as he reveals the tactics, the lies, and the emotional destruction he left behind, and what finally made him stop. From twisted love to guilt-laced silence, this isn't just a story, it's a reckoning. Confessions of a Manipulator isn't about forgiveness. It's about truth. And sometimes, the truth is the most dangerous thing of all. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Confessions of a Manipulator, My Personal Journey. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. The Smile That Fooled Them All. I didn't cry when my father left. Didn't beg him to stay. Didn't scream out, "Why?" like they do in the movies. I just stood at the doorway, a sticky red popsicle melting down my wrist, and watched his taillights disappear into the night. And I smiled. That moment, it changed everything. Not because he left, hell, plenty of dads leave, but because I learned something. Something sick. Something sacred. I learned that silence shakes people more than screams. That a smile, when it's not supposed to be there, unsettles even the strongest of hearts. My mother couldn't look me in the eye for 3 days. The neighbor who tried to offer condolences backed away slowly when I asked deadpan if I could have my dad's side of the bed now. I was 7 years old, and I already knew how to make people uncomfortable. That knowledge, it didn't scare me. It thrilled me. I felt like I had stumbled onto a superpower. Not strength, not speed, but something deeper, influence. The ability to warp a moment. Bend it. Own it. I started testing it more. Small things at first. Cry when I wanted the bigger cookie. Smile when the teacher yelled. I mean, really smile like I enjoyed it and watch her expression twitch with confusion. Fall down at recess. Then limp a little longer than necessary until someone offered to carry my bag. They weren't huge manipulations, but they worked. And every time someone reacted the way I wanted, whether with pity, praise, or discomfort, I felt this little flicker inside me. A buzz. A high. The world felt like it had gears I could turn, knobs I could twist. And no one suspected a thing. I was just the quiet kid. The one with the polite smile. The one who never really got upset. But I was watching. Always. Studying reactions. Timing responses. Taking mental notes like I was preparing for a final exam on the human psyche. It's weird looking back now, knowing how early it started. Most people have an origin story that involves trauma, some catastrophic betrayal that set them on a path of deceit and cold calculation. Mine was subtler. It wasn't that I didn't feel pain, I did. My father's absence left a hollow space I still sometimes fall into. My mother, God bless her, was so busy working night shifts and crying into folded laundry that she didn't see the way I was shaping myself. Not into a survivor, not into a victim, but into a weapon. I learned to mimic emotions I didn't feel. Laughter, concern, even love. I observed how people reacted to kindness versus indifference. I practiced different versions of myself in the mirror before school, deciding which me I wanted to be that day. The funny one, the shy one, the mysterious one. Each mask came with its own benefits. By the time I was 10, I could make adults cry just by telling them a made-up story about my daddy in heaven and how much I missed him. He wasn't dead. He was somewhere in Nevada with his new girlfriend and a second family. But death gets you better hugs than abandonment. And I was greedy. Not for affection, for control. The thing about manipulation is that it's rarely about malice at the start. It's about survival. It's about power. When the world teaches you that you can't count on anyone, you learn to stack the deck in your favor. And I was building a damn casino in my mind. By middle school, I was a ghost and a chameleon all at once. Invisible when I wanted to be. Magnetic when I needed attention. Teachers adored me, said I had an old soul. Whatever that means. Classmates trusted me, told me secrets they shouldn't have whispered to their diaries. And I kept every one of them. Not because I was loyal. Because secrets are currency. And I was already rich. I remember one afternoon in 8th grade, this kid Jake tried to make fun of me in front of some girls. Called me a robot, or some shit, said I was too quiet, too perfect, probably a serial killer in the making. The girls laughed. I didn't. I just smiled at him. A real smile. Warm. Friendly. And said, "Hey Jake, how How's your mom doing? She's still drinking herself to sleep. His face turned gray. The laughter died faster than it started. I knew about his mom because he'd told me months earlier, during a partner project. Said it was the first time he'd ever told anyone. Said he felt safe around me. He shouldn't have. That was the day I learned how powerful timing is. Information means nothing without delivery. It's like a blade. Useless if you don't know where to aim. I kept sharpening mine. By high school, I wasn't just manipulating people. I was orchestrating entire narratives. Framing conversations. Controlling gossip. Creating distractions. Playing the long game. I could make two people hate each other without ever saying a single lie. Just the right implications, the right pauses, the right tone. And the whole time, I kept that same innocent smile. The one that started the night my father vanished down the road. The same fucking smile. Looking back, I wonder if I even knew who I was under all those layers. The masks got comfortable. They clung to me like skin. I became a master of mimicry, but somewhere along the way, I stopped knowing what was real and what was rehearsed. Was I ever sincere? Did I ever laugh just because something was funny? Or was everything always calculated? It's a terrifying thing to realize that you might have faked yourself into oblivion, that your entire identity might be a collage of what other people wanted to see, or worse, what you wanted them to believe. But I wasn't ready to face that yet. Not in chapter one. Back then, all I knew was that I had a gift. Some kids played instruments. Others did sports. Me? I played people. And I was a fucking prodigy. Chapter 2. The art of seduction isn't about sex. They always say I was easy to talk to. You're such a good listener. I feel like I've known you forever. I used to nod and smile when people said that. Pretend I was flattered. But inside, I was grinning for a whole different reason. Because I designed it that way. I didn't stumble into charm by accident. I studied it. Broke it down like a science. Like a formula. Like a goddamn magic trick. And once I understood it, I weaponized it. Let me let you in on a little secret. Seduction isn't about sex. It's about control. It's about being wanted. Not physically, but emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. The kind of desire that scrapes raw at a person's insides. The kind that makes someone question themselves just to stay near you. Sex. That's child's play. You want real power? Make someone need you. Make them crave your approval like oxygen. That's where the art begins. And I was a goddamn artist. I learned early that most people are just waiting to be seen. That's it. Forget all the noise, all the flexing and posturing. Underneath it all, everyone is just aching to feel visible. To feel special. And I knew how to give that to them. Or at least make them believe I was. My trick. Mirroring. People don't fall in love with you. They fall in love with themselves through you. Give them just enough reflection, and they'll see their soul in your eyes. So I studied their language. If they were soft, I got quieter. If they were aggressive, I leaned in with fire. If they were insecure, I fed them compliments laced with mystery, just enough sweetness to hook them, but never so much they felt full. I made them work for the next hit. Because that's what seduction really is, dopamine manipulation. A drug. A rush. A high they associate with you. And when you learn to drip it out in doses, when you learn to withhold at just the right time, they chase. There was this one girl, Kendra. She was brilliant. The kind of woman who could reduce grown men to stammers just by walking in a room. Confident. Sharp-tongued. The kind of person you don't play games with unless you're willing to bleed. She was a challenge, which made her irresistible. I didn't go in hot. That's what amateurs do, compliments, flowers, desperate praise. I waited. Observed. Watched how she interacted with others. How she lit up when someone quoted poetry. How she stiffened when someone laughed at her intelligence. How her fingers trembled ever so slightly when she was pretending to be unfazed. She'd never admit it, but she needed validation. Not the loud kind. The intimate kind. So, I gave it to her. In pieces. In pauses. In looks that lasted half a second too long. In inside jokes crafted from her own language, stolen phrases, and carefully placed silences that made her wonder if I was holding back or hiding something deeper. The truth. I wasn't hiding anything. I just knew the power of ambiguity. Let someone fill in the blanks themselves, and they'll write a whole goddamn love story in their head. One where you're the answer. The solution. The missing puzzle piece. It didn't take long. One night, over drinks and jazz and a candlelit bar that I just happened to know she'd love, she leaned across the table and whispered, You make me feel like I'm the only person in the world when you look at me. And I smiled, because that was the goal, to make her feel seen, and then use that spotlight to cast shadows she didn't even know existed. See, people think manipulation is about lying, but I rarely ever lied. That's the beauty of it. I didn't have to. You don't need lies when you master curation. Tell the truth, but only parts of it. Share pain, but only in a way that makes them feel closer to you. Confess insecurities, but the ones that make you more relatable, never dangerous. It's like emotional alchemy. You blend sincerity with strategy, and suddenly you're the safest place in someone's world. Until you're not. There was this other woman, Elise. She wasn't like Kendra. She was tender, gentle, wore her trauma like perfume. Always there, lingering, even when she tried to cover it up with smiles. She'd been hurt before. Badly. And the way she latched onto affection? It was like watching someone drink after years in a desert. So I became the oasis. The texts at just the right time. The forehead kisses. The deep talks at 2 a.m. where I told her things like, "You make me feel calm," or, "I don't open up to many people, but with you." And then I'd let the sentence trail off, just enough for her to finish it herself. She did. Every time. Elise gave me everything, her heart, her time, her secrets. And in return, I gave her just enough love to keep her addicted. Just enough confusion to keep her anxious. Just enough silence to keep her chasing. And then I'd pull her back in with some grand gesture. A playlist of songs that reminded me of her, a surprise visit at work, a three-paragraph text confessing how much I struggled to feel worthy of someone so pure. It wasn't real, but it felt real. That's what matters. Because the heart doesn't know the difference between manipulation and magic. If it sounds like love, smells like love, aches like love, the body responds. And I was fluent in ache. I don't say this with pride. I say this because it's the truth. I could ruin a person with kindness. I could pull apart their armor using nothing but whispered admiration and thoughtful glances. I could take strong, intelligent, whole people and reduce them to shadows dancing for my approval. And I didn't feel bad. Not then. Because it wasn't about cruelty. It was about control. And I didn't know who I was without it. People saw me as warm, loving, safe. But I wasn't safe. I was calculated. I was cold beneath the warmth. I was the fire dressed in a blanket. Do you know how intoxicating it is to have someone's heart in your hand? To know they'll answer your call no matter the hour. To see their eyes flicker with joy when you walk into a room. To feel their soul lean toward yours like a flower toward sunlight. Even when you know you're the storm coming to drown them. I do, and it's fucking addictive. But even back then, something was starting to shift. A crack in the mirror. A tremor in the mask. Sometimes I'd look at someone who loved me, really loved me, and feel nothing. Just this hollow. This emptiness. I'd kiss them, and their eyes would flutter shut, and I'd think, they have no idea I'm not here. Not really. And that scared me. Because if I couldn't feel it anymore, if all of this was just echoes and performance, what did that make me? I'll tell you what. It made me powerful. But it also made me lost. And that was only the beginning. Chapter 3. Emotional blackmail tastes like love. "You make me feel like shit," she whispered, her voice shaking like glass about to shatter. I looked at her and smiled. Not the warm kind. Not the kind you give someone to make them feel safe. No, this one was different. Calm. Controlled. Cold in its confidence. Then I reached out, tucked a loose strand of hair behind her ear, and said, "You're just overthinking again. I love you. You know that, right?" Her shoulders dropped. Her lips trembled. And then, as if on cue, she nodded. That's the moment I knew I had her. And I hated how good it felt. Emotional blackmail isn't about shouting matches or doors slamming. It's not about calling someone names or bruising their skin. That's child's play. The real art, the kind that's silent and suffocating, is about guilt. About planting just enough fear, just enough self-doubt, just enough longing, that the other person starts to blame themselves for your cruelty. And I was fucking fluent in it. Her name was Maya. She had the kind of soul that still believed in people. Believed in effort. In kindness. In trying, even when the other person stopped deserving it. She was the perfect canvas. I didn't choose her because I loved her. I chose her because she was soft. And soft people, they break the most beautifully. We met in college. She was studying psychology. Ironic, I know. I remember thinking how perfect that was. A future therapist, analyzing me, peeling back my layers while I quietly rearranged hers. At first, I was everything she ever dreamed of. Attentive, funny, gentle. I'd show up to her classes with coffee, quote her favorite books, hold her when she cried over her parents' divorce. Listen, truly listen, when she opened up about things she'd never told anyone before. And every moment she gave me more of herself, I stored it, filed it away in the quiet corners of my mind like a collector hoarding valuables. Because one day, I'd use all of it. The shift was subtle. It always is. A missed call here. A late text reply there. A joke made at her expense in front of friends, brushed off with, "Babe, it was just a joke." And when she started to push back, when she dared to question if something had changed, I flipped the switch. I'd sigh, go silent, look wounded, maybe even cry if I needed to. Then I'd say something like, "I'm doing the best I can, and all you do is attack me." Or worse, "It's crazy how I'm always the villain in your stories. God, that one always worked." Because she'd panic. The moment I made her feel like she'd hurt me, her walls collapsed. Suddenly, she was the one apologizing. She was the one reaching, pleading, fixing. And me? I just leaned back and let it happen. Emotional blackmail doesn't just manipulate actions, it manipulates identity. I didn't tell Maya to stop seeing her friends. I just asked if she still cared about me, since she was always out. I didn't say she was selfish. I just said I felt neglected when she wanted space. I didn't say she was wrong to cry. I just asked if she was too emotional to really love someone like me. And slowly, she changed. She stopped going out. She stopped arguing. She stopped asking questions. She bent herself around my moods, trying to stay in my sunlight, not realizing it was me who kept moving the fucking sun. What's even worse? Sometimes I'd reward her. I'd cook her favorite meal out of nowhere, leave a sweet note on her pillow, post a cute photo of us with the caption, "How did I get so lucky?" Because that's the key, intermittent reinforcement. It's the reason slot machines are addictive. You don't win every time, but sometimes, just enough to keep playing. That's what I was doing to Maya, conditioning her. She never knew which version of me would show up. The loving boyfriend, the cold stranger, the exhausted victim, the passionate protector. So she stayed on edge, constantly trying to be better, kinder, quieter, smaller. Also, I wouldn't pull away. There was this one night I'll never forget. She found a text on my phone from another girl. Not sexual, just intimate. Words meant for a heart, not a friend. She confronted me, shaking, trying to be brave. And I laughed. I fucking laughed. "You're seriously jealous of a conversation?" She didn't speak. Just stared at me like she was watching someone she loved slowly become a stranger. So I stepped in close, cupped her face in my hands, whispered, "I can't breathe when you don't trust me." And just like that, she broke. Again, I could tell you I hated myself for doing it. I could say I wanted to stop. But the truth? Back then, it made me feel invincible. To twist reality so tightly around someone that they couldn't tell whether they were the problem. That's a high most people will never understand. It's a God complex in disguise. You're not just the villain. You're the savior, too. And when you play both roles long enough, the person you're manipulating doesn't know which version to run from, or which one to run toward. But here's the part they don't tell you. The more you gaslight someone, the more you start to gaslight yourself. I began to believe my own bullshit. That I was just misunderstood. That I was trying my best. That maybe Maya really was too emotional. Too needy. Too much. I stopped seeing her as a person. She became a mirror. And when she started reflecting parts of me I didn't want to look at, I blamed her. Eventually, Maya left. It wasn't loud. There was no big fight. No final scream. Just a note. A suitcase. And silence. And for the first time in a long time, I felt something unfamiliar. Not anger. Not victory. Not power. Just emptiness. Like a puppet master with no strings to pull. Like a show with no audience left to watch. And in that stillness, I had to ask myself something I'd never dared to ask before. Who am I if there's no one left to control? Emotional blackmail isn't just manipulation. It's a slow, rotting erosion of reality. And the worst part, by the time your victim realizes what's happening, they've already convinced themselves it's love. And maybe deep down you have too. Chapter 4, The Mirror Cracked. It happened at 3:17 a.m. Funny how the most pivotal moments in your life don't come crashing through the front door with sirens and fireworks. No, they creep in through the silence. Through the little hours. The hours when even the liars sleep. I was sitting alone in my apartment, one light on in the kitchen, ice melting in a whiskey glass I hadn't touched in over an hour, my phone face down, TV on mute, just me, and that goddamn mirror on the hallway wall. I looked at it, and for the first time in my life, really looked at it, I didn't see me. I sought something else. A hollowed version. The outline of a man wearing all the right expressions, but none of the truth. A collection of practiced lines and borrowed smiles. A stranger who'd stolen my skin and wore it like a disguise. And in that moment, it hit me. I had no idea who the fuck I was. Up until that point, my life was a performance. Every room I entered, I played a part. Every conversation had an agenda. Every gesture had a motive. Every silence was calculated. I wasn't just manipulating others. I was manipulating myself. It's easy, really. You lie enough times, you stop keeping track of the truth. The mask stops feeling like a mask. It becomes skin, then blood, then bone. And eventually, you forget there was ever anything beneath it. I'd crafted an identity from scraps, bits of who people wanted me to be, shards of the men I envied, echoes of who I thought power looked like. I never chose authenticity because authenticity didn't get you anywhere. Not in my world. Vulnerability? That was suicide. Honesty. A liability. But that night, the mirror didn't reflect the character I'd built. It reflected the void. I tried to look away, but I couldn't. It was like staring into a black hole and realizing you were the one pulling yourself in. My mind raced. Was this who I'd always been? Or had I lost myself along the way? Did I even have a self to return to? Or was I just fragments? I thought about Maya. About the way her voice broke the last time she said my name. The way she used to look at me like I held the sun in my hands. The way I'd turned her light off one manipulation at a time. And I didn't feel guilt. Not right away. What I felt was fear. Not fear of being alone. I was always alone. But fear of being empty. Because if I wasn't the person I convinced everyone I was, then what the hell was left? You spend your life controlling people, and you convince yourself that's power. You think you're ahead of the game, untouchable, above consequence. But here's the truth. You can't control someone without becoming a prisoner to their response. Every time I hurt someone, I had to rewrite the narrative in my head just to live with myself. They were too sensitive. She knew what she was getting into. I'm just protecting myself. People always leave anyway. Excuse after excuse. Layer after layer. Until I built a house of mirrors, so dense I couldn't see the exit. I walked over to that mirror that night, barefoot, shirtless, drunk on more than just whiskey. I stood in front of it and stared myself down like it was a duel. And I said out loud, words I'd never spoken to anyone before. You're a fucking coward. The words echoed off the kitchen tile and hit me in the chest like a fist. Coward. Not just because I manipulated. Not just because I lied. But because I hid. From pain. From love. From real connection. Every mask I wore was a wall. Every performance was a shield. Every game I played was just another way to avoid feeling. And I was so damn good at it, I almost got away with it. Almost. But mirrors don't lie. And that night, the reflection cracked. I started seeing it everywhere after that. In my gestures. In my voice. In the way people looked at me. That waitress at the diner who smiled too hard. The old friend who stopped texting back. The roommate who used to laugh at my jokes but now just nodded. They weren't seeing me anymore. They were seeing through me. And the worst part, they always had. I was just too wrapped in my own illusions to notice. There was this one moment that gutted me. I was scrolling through photos on my phone, trying to find a picture of a receipt, when I stumbled across a video Maya had taken of me laughing. It wasn't posed. I didn't know she was filming. I was leaning on the couch, laughing at something ridiculous she'd said. Eyes crinkled, head back, mouth open, real joy in my chest. And I didn't recognize the sound. It felt alien. Like hearing someone else's voice in your own body. And that's when it hit me. That version of me? He was real. And I'd buried him. Not to survive. But because I didn't think he was enough. After that, the unraveling began. Fast. The lies didn't come as easily. The charm started to feel brittle. The games lost their thrill. And for the first time, I started wondering what it would mean to stop. Not just stop manipulating people, but to strip it all away. To be raw, honest, real. But I didn't know how. I didn't have a blueprint for that. I'd built a mansion out of manipulation, and now I was trying to live in the wreckage without knowing which walls were load-bearing and which ones were rot. It was terrifying. because becoming someone new meant letting go of who I thought I was. And maybe that meant watching everything I'd built come crashing down. But maybe, just maybe, that's what needed to happen. Chapter 5. Redemption is a dirty word. Let me get something out of the way up front. This chapter won't have a fucking bow on it. There's no breakthrough epiphany. No sunbeam shining through the clouds. No dramatic piano swelling under a heartfelt apology. Because redemption? It's not clean. It's not poetic. It's not something you earn with a single tear or a well-timed confession. It's fucking ugly. It's raw, brutal self-confrontation. It's digging through your own wreckage, broken glass in your hands, trying to piece together a version of yourself that doesn't make you nauseous. Redemption is a dirty word. And this was the chapter one realized I wasn't chasing forgiveness. I was just trying to feel real again. After that night in the mirror, I started unraveling faster than I expected. The truth doesn't just show up and sit politely in the corner. It sinks in, it seeps, and it stains. Every conversation felt fake. Every compliment I gave felt like a script. Every interaction, a performance I couldn't stomach. And people noticed. I'd always been the confident one, the charmer, the one who could walk into a room and turn heads without even trying. But now, my energy was off. My timing, sloppy. My reactions, all wrong. I was glitching. I remember sitting across from an old friend, Eli, at a bar one night. He'd known me since high school, back when I was just sharpening the blades of my manipulation. He was laughing, telling some wild story, and I was just sitting there silent, not listening, not calculating, just disconnected. Finally, he stopped mid-sentence and looked at me frowning. "What's up with you, man? You good? You're not even trying anymore." He said it like a joke, but it fucking pierced. Because he was right. I wasn't trying anymore. I didn't know how to try without reverting back to the old moves, the charm, the spin, the curated emotional performance. And now that I'd seen behind the curtain, I couldn't go back to pretending it was all real. And I didn't know how to move forward either. So I did what cowards do. I disappeared. I ghosted. Pulled back from my circles. Let texts go unanswered. Flaked on plans. Blamed work. Anxiety. Anything that sounded noble enough to mask what was really happening. I was hiding. From everyone. But mostly from myself. The isolation wasn't peaceful. It was brutal. I started journaling. Not because I'm some poetic soul, but because my brain was fucking screaming all the time, and I needed a place to put the noise. I wrote things like, "What if the only reason I ever felt powerful was because I kept people weak?" Or, "Do I even know how to love without control?" And then one night, maybe I've never been in love at all. That one stuck with me. I thought about all the women I'd told I loved. The way I'd whispered it into necks, texted it with trembling thumbs, shouted it in fights just to stop them from leaving. Did I mean it? Or was "I love you" just another tool in my box? A fire extinguisher I pulled when things got too close to burning? I couldn't tell anymore. And that scared the shit out of me. Eventually, I tried to apologize. Not to everyone. I wasn't ready for that yet. But to one person, Maya. It took everything in me to even draft the message. My fingers hovered over the keyboard for an hour, rewriting the opening line over and over. Not because I didn't know what to say, but because I knew whatever I said, it wouldn't be enough. And guess what? It wasn't. I sent her a long, honest message. Took ownership. Didn't spin it. Didn't defend myself. Just laid it all out. Told her she didn't owe me anything, but I needed her to hear the truth. She read it. Didn't reply. And you know what? Good. Because that apology wasn't about getting her back. It wasn't about cleansing my guilt. It was about naming what I'd done. Making it real. Dragging it out of the shadows and holding it in my hands. And letting go of the fantasy that redemption meant someone would pat me on the back and say, "It's okay." It wasn't okay. It still isn't. There's this idea people cling to. That once you realize your flaws, once you own your damage, the healing begins. Bullshit. The real healing. It starts when you stop trying to be healed. When you stop trying to look good while you fall apart. When you stop searching for applause in your recovery. Because no one claps for the manipulator. They shouldn't. What I did. It wasn't a phase. It wasn't a product of my environment. It was a fucking choice. Repeated. Refined. Perfected. And now I had to live with the residue of those choices. Every time I met someone new, I could feel the old instincts scratching at the door. Compliment her vulnerability, she'll trust you. Play a little distant, he'll chase. show a sliver of pain, she'll feel needed. But now, I slammed the door shut. Not because I'm some reformed saint, but because I was finally aware of how much damage I'd caused just by being charming. Redemption didn't taste sweet. It tasted like ash. Like silence. Like rewinding every moment and realizing how much of it was theater. Like sitting in a room full of people who used to adore you and knowing, if they really saw you, they wouldn't stay. But I didn't need them to stay anymore. I needed to stay with myself. And that meant cutting the strings I'd tangled around everyone else. No more bait. No more hooks. No more fishing for affection like it was a competition. Just stillness. The first real stillness of my entire life. And in that stillness, something strange began to happen. I started to feel. Not manipulation masquerading as emotion. Not rehearsed sadness. Not strategic guilt. But actual fucking feelings. Sometimes I'd cry during movies, something I hadn't done since I was a kid. I'd wake up from dreams where I was still manipulating someone and feel disgusted instead of victorious. I'd catch myself mid-line conversation and stop, awkwardly, fumbling, unsure how to continue with just the truth. It was messy. It was clumsy. But it was real. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm better now. I'm not. I still slip. Still catch myself trying to control a moment instead of surrender to it. Still feel that old hunger for validation creep in like a fucking ghost. But I'm watching it now. And that's a start. Chapter 6, The One I Couldn't Break. Her name was Jada. Not the first woman I'd seduced. Not the most beautiful. Not the most forgiving. But without question, the one who changed everything. I didn't know it at the time. Didn't realize that meeting her would be the slow undoing of the last layer of armor I'd built around myself. Didn't understand that someone could see you. Not just your surface, not just your curated personality, but all of you, and still not flinch. I'd encountered skeptics before. Strong women. Smart men. People who asked questions, who pushed back, who tried to get to know the real me. But Jada? She didn't try. She just did. And that's what scared the fuck out of me. We met at a friend's housewarming. One of those pseudo-intimate apartment parties with too many people, not enough alcohol, and awkward energy you could cut with a butter knife. I remember she was sitting alone in the corner, quietly sipping on red wine, watching the room like a chessboard. Not judging. Not flirting. Just watching. I was drawn to her. Not in the typical way, either. This wasn't about power or prey. There was something magnetic about her stillness. Something that disrupted my usual game before I even stepped onto the field. Still, I approached her the same way I always did. Smile tuned just right, posture casual, eyes soft with intention. You look like you're here by force, I said. She didn't smile. Didn't laugh. And you look like someone who says that to every woman standing alone. Her tone was calm. Neutral. Like she wasn't impressed, but wasn't playing defense either. Right then, I felt something unfamiliar. Uncertainty. Our conversation lasted an hour. Then two. But it wasn't like the others. She didn't swoon. She didn't feed my ego. She didn't lean in when I got vulnerable or soften when I sprinkled in charm. She questioned everything. Not in an aggressive way. But with a subtle confidence that left no room for bullshit. I told her about my childhood, about my absent father. Normally, that line would stir empathy, tug on heartstrings. Jada just tilted her head and said, "Do you ever wonder how much of that story you've turned into a shield? No pity, just a scalpel." I walked away from that party with her number, but it didn't feel like a win. It felt like a challenge, like she was giving me a rope and waiting to see if I'd hang myself. And honestly, part of me wanted to impress her. Another part wanted to run. But I couldn't stay away. Over the next few weeks, we talked. Not flirty texts. Not late-night desperation. Conversations. Real ones. We debated ethics. Psychology. Art. Trauma. She wasn't afraid to call me out mid-sentence when I spun something to sound deeper than it was. That sounds profound, but it doesn't actually mean anything. She once said after I quoted some half-baked philosophical nonsense I'd memorized years ago. And she was right. She always was. But it wasn't her accuracy that disarmed me. It was the fact that she never tried to fix me. Never tried to understand me to save me. She didn't treat me like a project. She treated me like a person. Flawed. Dangerous. Wounded. But still a person. And that fucked me up. Because I'd built my entire identity around being needed. Desired. Chased. Jada didn't need me. She didn't want anything from me except honesty. and I didn't know if I had any to give. The night I realized I couldn't manipulate her, really couldn't, was when I tried to push her away. It was a pattern I'd used 100 times. Step 1, start acting distant. Step 2, let the silence speak. Step 3, plant the seed of abandonment. Step 4, wait for them to beg, to ask what's wrong, to try harder. Jada didn't take the bait. Instead, she sent a single message after 3 days of silence. You don't scare me, you know. And I don't owe you a performance. That text nearly gave me a fucking panic attack. Because it meant she saw it. Not just the mask, but the intention beneath it. And it meant that if I wanted to stay in her life, I had to show up. Not as the version of me I'd mastered over the years, but the broken one. The confused one. The man I didn't even fully know yet. So I called her. Told her the truth. Not the polished, therapist-friendly version I'd given others, but the jagged, shame-laced, uncomfortable truth. I told her about Maya, about the lies, the guilt, the silence, the control. I told her I didn't know how to love without war, and she listened, not with pity, not with judgment, just with presence. Then she said something I'll never forget. You don't manipulate because you're evil. You manipulate because you're terrified of being powerless. But I won't be your mirror. That broke me. Because she didn't yell. She didn't cry. She didn't shame me. She just refused to reflect the version of myself I wanted her to. And that left me with only one thing. Myself. The days after that conversation were quiet. Heavy. I didn't text her. She didn't chase me. And for once, I didn't try to fill the silence with someone else's attention. Didn't line up a replacement. Didn't retreat into charm. I just sat with it. Sat with the fact that someone saw me, truly saw me, and didn't want to fix me, but also refused to be broken by me. It was humbling. It was fucking holy. And it was the first time I understood that being seen is more terrifying than being wanted. Because being seen, it means you can no longer lie to yourself. Jada didn't save me. She didn't need to. She reminded me that salvation isn't something someone hands you. It's something you earn, by choosing to show up without a mask. By telling the truth even when it hurts. By staying when it's easier to run. I don't know what she is to me now. A ghost? A muse? A mirror I can never escape? All I know is this. She was the one I couldn't break. And maybe that's what finally broke me open. Chapter 7. Confession isn't redemption, but it's a start. If you've made it this far, you're probably wondering what kind of ending this story deserves. But this isn't a story, is it? It's a fucking confession. And confessions don't end with applause. They end with silence. Heavy, honest, uncomfortable silence. Because nothing I've said makes me worthy of forgiveness. Nothing I've shared here redeems me. I didn't fall in love. I didn't transform into a better man. I didn't win the girl back, or save someone from the fire I set. All I did was stop running. And for someone like me, that's the biggest thing I've ever done. This whole journey started with a smile. That first one. At the doorway. When my father left, I used to tell myself that smile was strength, that it was power, that it was me choosing not to be broken. But it wasn't. It was the beginning of a performance that never ended. I became a puppet master because I thought that was the only way to survive. Make people love you, or make them fear you, just never let them leave you. Never let them see that deep down, you're the scared kid watching taillights disappear. But the truth, that kid never stopped standing there. He just put on nicer clothes and learned how to fake confidence. I've manipulated lovers into staying when they should have run. I've made friends question their own instincts so I could stay in control. I've smiled through apologies I never meant. I've weaponized silence. I've polished lies until they shone like truth. And I've done it all without raising my voice, without throwing a punch, without ever getting caught. But that doesn't make it less violent. It just makes it quietly destructive. Like carbon monoxide. You don't see it. You don't smell it. You just wake up choking. There's something else no one tells you about being a manipulator. Eventually, you start manipulating yourself. You start believing your own narratives. You rewrite the past in your favor. You justify your worst moments with your best intentions. And then, when the people you love finally leave, when the silence becomes louder than your lies, you're left with something worse than guilt. You're left with you. And that's the part that nearly broke me. Not the shame. But the emptiness underneath it. I remember sitting on the floor one night, lights off, my phone buzzing with unanswered messages. Not from exes. Not from friends. From therapists I'd been too scared to call. Because deep down, I knew what they'd ask me. They'd want the root of it. The childhood trauma. The abandonment wound. The control issues. And sure, I could connect the dots. I could give you the psychology. I could list every book I read trying to fix myself from a distance. But it was all still performance. Still me, trying to sound like a man doing the work, instead of actually doing it. What changed? Nothing dramatic. There was no rock bottom. No overdose. No suicide note. No public humiliation. Just silence. And the slow, painful realization that if I didn't start telling the truth, even when no one was watching, I'd spend the rest of my life acting in a movie no one was filming. That's when I started writing this. Not for clicks. Not for pity. For me. To bleed something real. To take back my voice from the lies I'd stuffed it with. To confess, not to be cleansed, but to be seen. Not by others, but by myself. So here it is. The truth, in all its ugliness. I have hurt people. Not just emotionally, but spiritually. I have manipulated good hearts into hating themselves. I have used my pain like a scalpel and called it love. I have pulled people close just to watch them fall apart beneath me. And I regret it. Not just because of what I lost, but because of what I never gave. Real love. Real safety. Real connection. All things I convinced others I was offering, without ever knowing how to hold them myself. I wish I could end this chapter with a redemption arc. I wish I could tell you I'm in love now. That I'm healthy. That I've fixed the damage. But healing isn't a straight line. It's a loop. Some days, I wake up proud of the man I'm becoming. Other days, I feel the old instincts clawing at the surface. The need to control. The urge to lie. The temptation to perform. But I'm watching it now. That's the difference. I catch it. And I choose different. Not always. But more often than I used to. Jada once told me, "You can't undo the harm. But you can stop handing it forward." That sentence sits in me like a prayer. It doesn't erase the past. But it gives me a place to stand. If you've been on the other side of someone like me, if you've been manipulated, gaslit, controlled, drained, I'm not here to ask for your forgiveness. I don't deserve it. But I see you now. I understand what I stole. And I hope you get it back tenfold. If you've been me, if you've used charm as a weapon, if you've bent people until they broke, if you've worn masks so long you forgot what your own face looked like, it's not too late. But it starts here. With silence. With truth. With the slow, painful dismantling of everything you thought made you strong. It starts with confession. Not to anyone else. Just to the mirror. And if you can do that, if you can look yourself in the eyes and not flinch, then maybe, just maybe, you're not too far gone. This isn't a redemption story. It's a reckoning. And maybe that's enough. For now.